best-selling and acclaimed author Wayne Johnston. His latest book is The Custodian of Paradise, which continues the story of Sheila Fielding, the heroine in his landmark book The Colony of Unrequited Dreams, which the Globe and Mail identified as one of the 100 most important Canadian books ever produced. The Custodian of Paradise, 3495 from Knopf, is his seventh novel. His last novel, The Navigator of New York, spent a lot of time on the bestseller lists, and his memoir, Baltimore's Mansion, was critically acclaimed and won a number of prizes. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Wayne Johnston. Good morning, Mr. Johnston.
Good morning.
I read your bio on the on your website and said that your hockey equipment was thrown out with the garbage. How old were you when that happened, and who threw it out?
Well, I was 14, and that's a fact. Who threw it out remains a question. I think it must have been my father, because he's the only one who had the authority to throw things out. I had the previous year, when the hockey season was over, put it all in a bag and put it up in the rafters in the basement. And when the next year began, when I was 14, went to get the bag again, and it was missing. And I, you know, asked around the house, asked members of my family if they'd seen it, and they said no. So I came to the only possible conclusion, which was that my father, who was constantly cleaning the house, even the basement, must have mistaken the bag as, you know, containing something worthless. So out went my skates and everything else, and yeah, that's the main turning point in my life, I think.
Did you still wish that, did you wonder that, you know, what might have been if you'd gone, and, or are you just being facetious there?
Oh, no, I'm just kidding, really. I was always a decent ball hockey player, but when it came to ice hockey, I could never skate well enough to be a serious contender for any hockey league, let alone the NHL.
You've lived in Toronto now for over 16 years, I've read.
Yep.
Do you miss Newfoundland, or is it so much a part of you that you really never leave it?
It's partly the latter, and it's also that because I'm a writer, I get a lot of invitations to go there. I'll be going there twice more before the year ends, and that will bring to a total just for this year of 10 or 11, I'm not sure which, trips to Newfoundland. So I get there very frequently. I see my Newfoundland friends as often as I ever did, actually. So I don't really get a chance to get homesick for it.
How did they react to your books there? Do you consider it sort of Newfoundland's favorite son or not?
I don't know if it's favorite son, because I'm not around long enough to really tell, you know. No, the reception of my books has been great. The only little bump in the road was Colony of Unrequited Dreams, because it was about Smallwood, and because Smallwood had, you know, not been long deceased by the time the book came out. But after about, that was 98, after about a year, people seem, even, you know, the original opponents of the book seem to have actually read it and read it carefully and realized what it was trying to do. And my reception there now is, you know, just about universally positive. And as I say, I see, you know, I see all my friends as much as I used to, and they're still my friends. So and I see them in Toronto as well, because Toronto is a place that people come through. Or come to for one reason or another, and come through on their way to other places. So I think I'm pretty well regarded there.
Have you ever thought of writing a Toronto novel, something based in Toronto?
You know, I have frequently thought about it, and one of the things for me that's missing is a sense that I really, really know the place inside out, that it's sort of a part of me, which Newfoundland is. And I think because I don't have that, I feel like I wouldn't be doing the place justice if I wrote a book about it. I mean, that's how I feel now. It may be someday that I'll feel differently, and and I'll write a book about it. I've seen other people write books about it, not many, but a few, fewer and fewer, actually. It used to be not common, but it was a done thing anyway to write about Toronto, but not anymore. I can really only think now of, say, Mike Londaci's In the Skin of a Lion, couple of other books, maybe a book by Russell Smith, but not too many. It's more and more difficult, I think, to write about Toronto. It's so diverse.
Fielding appeared in The Colony of Unrequited Dreams. How long after that book did you know that you were going to write her in the second book, in this book, The Custodian of Paradise?
I actually knew before I finished Colony of Unrequited Dreams. I didn't write about her in my next book because of the controversy that kind of blew up over Colony of Unrequited Dreams, not just in Newfoundland, but elsewhere. You know, the controversy really was about the question of combining history and fiction, which had been done countless times elsewhere, but not so much in Canada. But I knew when I got to the end of Colony that I hadn't said as much about Fielding as I wanted to, and I hadn't given her a chance to tell her own story. Her story was in Colony, but only as much as it needed to be to flesh out Smallwood's story. So what I did at the end of writing Colony was go back and go right through the book from start to finish and change a few things here and there to allow myself some maneuvering room so that when I came back to write The Custodian of Paradise, I would be able to tell the story from Fielding's point of view without contradicting things in the first book.
She's obviously a favorite character of yours, or else you wouldn't have written the second book. Mm-hmm. The character obviously comes from you, the author. This may sound like an odd question, but did you find any difficulty coming up with a character so rich that was a female because you were a male?
No, in a way, I think it helped. It sort of gave me fresh eyes to look at Newfoundland with. When I was writing Colony, The Colony of Unrequited Dreams, I frequently made use of Fielding's letters and columns and journal entries, and so probably maybe one-fifth of that book was already from her point of view, so I had a kind of rehearsal for it for Custodian of Paradise, but I actually liked the idea, even when I first conceived of it, of writing from the point of view of a woman, just, you know, because excuse me, because Smallwood's book, Colony, was just, when I was first writing, it was sort of listing to one side, if you imagine it as a ship, just from the weight of his personality. And I hadn't included Fielding in the book at all up to that point, and I realized that Smallwood needed, either as a friend or an enemy, a character as large and as strong as him. But when I looked in the history books, I couldn't find any such character, especially in the first 50 years of Smallwood's life. And so what I made the jump to doing then was inventing a character. And first I thought, okay, Smallwood was never a ladies' man, so this character should be a man, but even an invented man didn't work. The tension wasn't there. I needed someone that Smallwood would hate to be bested by, and anyone who knew Smallwood or read about him in his autobiography knew that that would be a woman. And so that's where the idea came from, and out of that came Sheila Fielding over the course of a lot of writing and rewriting.
You obviously like the character. You call her your favorite character that you've created.
Yeah.
How do readers react to her? Do they like her? Do they hate her?
Most of them really, really like her, but even the ones who find her, you know, a bit acerbic, a bit too sarcastic or whatever, still like her as a character. They just think of her as maybe not someone they would like to go to dinner with, but they are able to draw the distinction between that and a good literary character. But almost everyone who comes up to me to have a book signed after readings says, you know, that they're so glad I brought her back from Colony of Unrequited Dreams, or that I created her in the first place. And I've had people say quite vehemently, you know, not with any irony intended, quite vehemently, whatever you do, don't kill her off in one of your books, you know. Always leave open the possibility that she can come back again.
Oh, I'm speaking with Wayne Johnston. The new book is called The Custodian of Paradise, already a big hit, a bestseller across the country, $34.95 from Knopf. Who comes up with the titles of your book? I'm just reading them from your bio. They're evocative as heck.
Thanks. Yeah, I come up with them. It takes a long time. A lot of writers 50 years ago, 100 years ago, could sort of plunder the Bible or plunder Shakespeare for sort of ready-made titles. A book, say, like The Sun Also Rises or For Whom the Bell Tolls, Hemingway books. But I, you know, can't really do that anymore because as far as I can tell, just about every such title has been used. So what I wind up doing is just sitting down with a notebook and thinking to myself, you know, what is centrally the book about? And I try to think of a particular word that I figure has to be in the title, and then build the title around that. So, for instance, in Colony of Unrequited Dreams, the central word was colony, and then I built the title around that. In The Custodian of Paradise, it was paradise. I had a long time, you know, deciding about custodian, but whenever I consulted my editor or whatever, they all were pushing for that title, and I was unsure just because it sounded, you know, it sounds a bit like Colony of Unrequited Dreams. But everybody said, well, you know, it is a companion book to it, and there may be a third one. So why not have all three titles somewhat evocative of each other? So that's what I eventually decided to do.
I've always found it interesting how characters like Fielding come about. You saw her in a photograph, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
In the encyclopedia. How do you come up with their names?
In Fielding's case, several things come into play. Her first name is Gaelic for witch, good witch, which is kind of how I think of her. And then her last name, there were several reasons. Bishop Field is the school where Smallwood goes and where, in a sense, his fate is decided. So Field, coming into Fielding's name seemed appropriate. Also, the first book ever written in English that was considered to be a novel was written by Henry Fielding, and I kind of wanted Fielding to seem like, in fictional terms, Newfoundland's first writer, and so Fielding again seemed appropriate. And then the sound is always an issue, so when I put the two together, they sounded right, Sheila Fielding, so that's basically how it came about.
Now, how do you write? Do you find time to write on this tour? I'm looking at the schedule, and you seem to go across the country in quick succession.
Yeah.
Did you find time to write on tour, or?
What I do on tour is take notes for my next book. I always know, I make sure to know, before I finish a book, what my next book is going to be. And so what I've been doing in the small amounts of spare time that I have is taking notes about where I think the novel is going to go, how it's going to begin. And beyond that, I really don't have the sort of space for. I need to concentrate on, you know, Guardian or Custodian of Paradise. I'm reading from it so often, and I want to read from it with conviction and not be distracted by, you know, a work in progress. But I do, you know, I would go a little crazy, I think, if I wasn't spending at least some time on a work in progress.
Do you take suggestions from reviewers or readers?
Not really. It's no knock on reviewers or readers, but I just find that for me, the process of writing is so organic. It just sort of has its own life, that the likelihood of an outside suggestion being incorporated into a book is just too remote. Sometimes I will get inspiration from a reader, at least, but usually from an accidental kind of remark that they make. You know, it's not a suggestion on their part. It's just something they say that ignites something in my head, and I'll write that down, and I have been doing that for the past 6 weeks. Well, not 6 weeks, but 5 weeks, I guess. And I've done that fairly often. You know, one of the things about a book tour, and this particular tour is the biggest I've ever been on, is, you know, you cross the country completely, and you see the whole of it as, you know, most people never get a chance to see it, and so that does get your mind working in certain directions, and I'm taking advantage of that as well.
You're working on the third book, are you, or?
I'm 99% sure there will be a third Fielding book. What I'm doing now in terms of taking notes is sort of a kind of non-committal taking of notes, because I work from an idea and then move outwards, and so I as yet don't know that much about the characters or the setting. I'm just kind of finding the place in my mind where the book will go. It could be about Fielding, or I could go the direction I did after Colony of Unrequited Dreams and write another book as removed from Newfoundland as Navigator of New York was, for instance.
You don't see a book about traveling the country, do you? Just thinking about you talking about the tour there.
Yeah. I tell you, it's an enormous country. It's just, you know, aside from being enormous in distance, it's enormous in its variety. It's just a bewilderingly large country and diverse country. And it kind of poses you the challenge of, you know, write about me. You know, that's how it feels to me. And, you know, when I was talking about writing about Toronto and how diverse that is and how difficult it would be to sort of capture the essence of Toronto, if there is one, because it's so diverse, you multiply that by 1,000 for Canada. So it's a pretty daunting prospect. There are many nations, it seemed to me, that are in aggregate make up the country of Canada, and until I see it, or if I see it in a greater whole than that, you know, one piece, I doubt that I would be able to write a sort of pan-Canadian novel.
A lot of the entertainment writers across the country made a big deal about the so-called big names in CanLit that were shut out of the Giller Prize and the Governor General Prize, including yourself. I've read that you don't regard reviews; they don't matter to you. Reviews don't. Getting shut out of the prizes, did that mean anything, or did you just take that as a grain of, just as any writer would?
Well, I wouldn't. I'm not sure as any writer would, because in my experience, everyone's reaction to either being or not being nominated is different. It's a strange kind of thing. You know, if you get nominated, you feel euphoric for about a day, and then you sort of come back to earth. And it's exactly the same in reverse. If you don't get nominated, you feel not so great for a day, and then You realize the sky hasn't fallen, nothing's changed, and you just go on. My only concern when it comes to awards and reviews is how will it affect the book? You know, will I have as many readers as I would have had, you know, something else happened? And as far as I can tell so far, it's a negligible effect for me, so I'm not too concerned about it. You know, it's juries are strange sort of, you know, organisms. Different jury would have come up with different lists, and that's basically, you know, as much as I think about it. I basically, while writing and even after I finished a book, I just try not to think about anything but the book itself.
Well, you don't need good luck for this book because it's already a huge success, but good luck nonetheless, and thanks for coming on today, Wayne.
My pleasure.
The book is called The Custodian of Paradise, $34.95, published by Canonical.